For decades, milk has been fueling women marathon runners as the OG performance drink. And in the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers takes us on a journey of self-discovery as she meets several groups of empowered women runners to find out what drives them, what fuels them, and what pushes them to go the distance. And in the process, she learns that she, too, can be a distance runner. You can watch the series at runningsucktheseries.com and register for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon at everywomansmarathon.com.
A new social media campaign is targeting celebrities who haven't spoken out against what's happening in Gaza. But is it working?
The sort of blockout movement is a lot more about the shifting attitudes towards celebrity than it is about really achieving anything. Because yes, Kim Kardashian has lost followers, and there are some cases where celebrities are seeing a dent. But I think this movement misunderstands how traditional celebrities make most of their money.
I'm Taylor Lorenz, and we'll be talking about the celebrity blockout this week on Power User.
Hey, you are listening to Intuit from Vulture, and we have got a lot of pop culture to talk about this episode. And by a lot of pop culture, I mean a lot of blue people. Avatar is back this weekend. I just saw it. I have thoughts. We're going to discuss it. We will talk later with a Vulture movie critic who says, actually, Avatar is good. Great, in fact, he argues. And even though Avatar is the butt of a lot of jokes, he says, this movie kind of changed Hollywood. I will let him explain because I need to hear that reasoning. But first, a game. You know how it goes. Every week we play Intuit, Not Intuit. And every week we just keep getting the heavy hitters. I am joined for this episode's game by Niles Abston. Niles, hello. Tell folks who you are.
Hello, I'm Niles Abston. I'm a stand-up comedian, writer on the hit show Dave on FX.
Before we start the game, I do have to ask, do you have any big thoughts on the film Avatar?
Again? Like, we need another one?
We're getting another one. Are you going to go see it?
If somebody, like, rips it online, I'm it's just like, dog, like, I ask people all the time that like the first one, and I'm like, so what was your favorite scene in the first Avatar movie? And they're like, you know, the one that looks really good. And I'm like, you don't remember shit from the first movie, bro. Like, it just looked dope.
Well, I'm happy to tell you that the new one is coming. I went to see it last night. We're going to talk with one of Vulture's film critics about the film and the franchise later. But I'm going to let you know first, before all of that, this movie, this new Avatar, it's 3 hours and 10 minutes long.
Of course it is.
He said that very matter-of-factly. Why, of course.
James Cameron makes those movies for him, and then the rest of us just get to watch them.
A.K.A. suffer.
Exactly.
Anywho, this game is not about James Cameron. It's about you, Niles. We're going to play a game that I call Intuit, Not Intuit.
Sounds great.
It's really simple. I share three stories from the week of pop culture, the zeitgeist, and you just tell me if you're into those stories or not into those stories and why. At the end, I'll give you a score, tell you if you won, and it will all be based on my opinion of your opinions.
Okay.
All right. First, Niles, are you into or not into Dave Chappelle bringing Elon Musk out on stage during a comedy show he did in San Francisco a few days ago?
Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for the richest man in the world.
Very not into it.
Okay, that was very matter of fact. Tell me why.
I mean, comedy at its core is you're supposed to make fun of the power structure. Nigga, you gonna bring the power structure and give it a microphone and put it on stage with you?
So I heard about it. I heard he got booed. Then I watched the video. Dave Chappelle was calling Elon the N-word on
yeah.
the stage.
Whatever. Look, motherfucker. This nigga is not even trying to die on Earth.
Yeah, and it makes me feel like, does Elon say that shit with him? Like, when they not in public? Like, I feel like Elon probably gives him $60 million a nigga.
And you know what, Niles? It's not enough.
It's not enough.
I will say, as much as I'm annoyed at Elon Musk right now for what he is doing to Twitter, it did feel good to see him get booed. So for that alone, I'm happy that Chappelle brought him on stage.
That's interesting.
Right?
I get that.
So after this all happened, he got booed for like 10 minutes. Elon later tweeted in response to a rando online. He wrote, technically, it was 90% cheers and 10% boos. Did you see that?
Yeah, that's crazy that somebody that rich can't do math. You know what I'm saying? Because that is not what happened if you just watch the video.
Apparently, though, all of this was about Chappelle trying to get Elon to Twitter unban his friend Talib Kweli.
Right. Fuck that.
I love how resolute you are in all of this.
Nothing Talib Kweli is important enough to bring him back on that app.
Number two, are you into or not into all of this AI portrait cartoon foolishness your friends are doing on Instagram?
I'm so not into it, man. It's just like, people were saying the government was tracking us and all this kind of stuff, and then now they just giving their face away. I don't understand. Like, whenever these robot cops need to put a case on somebody, they just gonna go through the list of niggas. Well, I already got his face, so I'm just gonna say he did it. I think that's just how it's gonna work.
I gotta say, I was maybe a little bit into it before I read up on it. For a second, I was like, let me try this. Let me, you know, make myself pretty. Let me manifest my body dysmorphia. But then I read up on it, and this thing is called the Lensa AI Portrait app.
Uh-huh.
It costs money.
Yep.
It costs money.
Yeah, it was a dude buying AI pics, and he owed me money.
Did you call him out?
Yeah, I tweeted about him.
What did you tweet? Please tell us.
I just literally tweeted. I said, there's a motherfucker out here buying AI pics, and he owed me money. Because I thought the shit was free. And then somebody told me, like, nah, you got to pay for it. And I'm just like, that just goes to show you, in America, if you think you're going to look hotter, you'll just, like,
people
pay for it and give your information away.
Do you know how much it cost?
I think it was like $8 to $10.
Oh, that's after the initial fee. So there's more fees on top of it, which I think are 8 or 10. But a year-long subscription to the app starts at $35.99.
No way.
Yeah, it costs $35. Does that make you even less into it or more into
it? Even less into it. I'm out here putting comedy specials out for free, and they charging $35 for fake pictures? I'm doing it wrong.
If you had to do it, what kind of cartoon AI thing would you want to be?
I want to be a Pokemon.
I want to be the very best.
Tell me more, please.
I mean, think about it. Whenever you feel like it, you frustrated, you just get to fight, and it's okay. You don't go to jail. Like, that shit dope.
That's true. Do you Pokemon Go?
No, but my roommate does it all the time. Like, we'll be going somewhere and she'll just stop. I'm like, what are you doing? It's like, well, there's a rat-a-tat over here. I'm like, bro.
Rat-a-tat.
Rat-a-tat. It likes cheese, nuts, fruits, and berries. Yeah,
all right, we've got two no's. Here's the third. Are you into or not into Dyson, the vacuum people, launching air purifying headphones next year?
I'm into it. Some of y'all apartments be stanky as fuck.
I want to know if you're going to be into it after you see it, so I'm going to make you Google it right now. If you can, just Google Dyson air purifying headphones. D-Y-S-O-N. I want you to see it.
Okay. Let's see what they look like. Oh, what the hell?
Describe it for our listeners who can't see because of the podcast.
It's like you got this like big mouthpiece on.
It's like a grill guard.
Yeah, and it's connected to the headphones. I guess is that to like... So you're not like inhaling the whatever it's spraying out? Is that how it works?
So you're not into this?
I think I'm still into it, man.
Because
we need to purify the air a little more.
You do know there's like a really cheap air purifying system available right now in the culture. It's called the face mask, and that's like $2.
That's also true.
Also, I don't think you know how much it costs yet. Guess how much this thing costs?
$2.99.
More
than $299.
Yes, my dog. More up. Go guess again.
$600.
Go more higher.
Oh my God. $1,200.
No, okay, less. It's like $950.
That's crazy. All right, I'm not into it anymore. That's
ridiculous. Let me tell you something. Go to the CVS, get you those cheap $12 Skull Candy earbuds, and then buy a few face masks. You're gonna have this whole operation for less than $20. Okay.
Look at that.
All right, if Dyson makes everything, they make the vacuum, they make the hand dryer, they make the hair dryer, now they make the air purifying headphones, what do you want Dyson to make next?
I feel like they would make like a dope ass, like portable, like a neck or back massager. If you can power a vacuum, like you definitely could get this crink out my back, you know what I'm saying?
A vacuum. Get it? Sorry. Nope. That was bad.
Okay. I see you.
I think this edition of the game has had more no's than any other edition of Intuit, Not Intuit. And for that reason alone, you are our contradictory king. You have won the game. Niles, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
If Elon is in an Avatar movie, what is his character? It's my last question for you.
You know those characters in the movie that don't really serve any purpose, but they're like the evil villains, like Lackey, yeah. And all they do is just like repeat what the evil villain says. That's wow. Him. He gets killed in the first 40 minutes.
There you have it, listeners.
Calling all female runners, it's time to lace up and join Team Milk. Since the 2022 New York City Marathon, Team Milk has sponsored female marathon runners nationwide, providing support and shining a spotlight on their unique stories, perseverance, and drive to go the distance. Why milk? Dairy milk is an excellent nutritional add for both marathon training and recovery. Milk contains 13 essential nutrients, including high-quality protein, making it a crucial component of a training diet. Plus, it's one of the best beverages for hydration, even better than water. The same electrolytes that are added to many of your favorite sports drinks are found naturally in milk. And in 2024, Team Milk is taking the next step to empower female runners by launching the only women's marathon in the U.S. designed for and by women. Built to be accessible, empowering, and community-building, the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon will take place in Savannah, Georgia, on November 16, 2024. You can learn more and register for the marathon at everywomansmarathon.com.
Sebastian Younger is a writer and a veteran journalist who never believed in the afterlife. But a near-death experience forced him to question what he thought he knew.
You know, maybe we don't understand everything in scientific terms. Maybe there is something missing here that is very significant about how reality works, how life and death work, what consciousness is, and ultimately what the universe is.
Hear more this week on The Gray Area, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell folks who you are.
My name is Bilge Ibiri, and I am a film critic for New York Magazine and Vulture.
And you buried the lead. You are perhaps Vulture and New York Magazine's biggest Avatar enthusiast slash defender?
I guess that's probably true now. I feel like back in the day, you know, Vulture was filled with Avatar nuts, but it's possible they've all left for greener pastures and I'm the only one left.
I have a lot of thoughts on Avatar. I went to see the new one last night and managed to stay awake the entire 3 hours and 10 minutes, which is more than I could say for my experience watching the first one many years ago. We're going to get to perhaps our differing viewpoints on this film and the franchise. But first, I want you to give me your top line thoughts on the Avatar franchise in like no more than 3 sentences.
My Avatar elevator pitch, if you will, I guess. I would say that it's an environmental action movie series. And as such, it's probably the most personal thing that James Cameron has ever done.
That's one sentence.
That's one sentence. Because it carries within it the two extreme sides of his personality, which is the tough guy, gearhead, machine gun, warfare loving, macho, swaggery guy on the one hand. And on the other, the sea loving, vegan environmentalist flower child who just wants to be one with nature and the spirit world and believes that we're all connected.
Okay. That felt like an addition to the first sentence. So if you have a little more, I will let you keep going.
Well, I'm pretty good with run-on sentences, so I could probably find a way to do my whole review in three sentences just with a lot of ands and semicolons. But I think it's also a way for him to connect with audiences in that way, because he's able to tell a sweet, corny story, but to do so in a way that also delivers, you know, an exciting, spectacular action epic for audiences. I think my cat agrees as well, as you can hear him in the background.
Yeah. And we should point out here, this central plot line, and there are no spoilers in this, you've seen it a bunch in movies. The humans, usually the white humans, bring their guns and their weapons and try to take over or invade a more peaceful, earth-focused land with native peoples.
And we will show the sky people
so to them we do it,
that they cannot take whatever they want.
Soon for KMCV.
And that this...
Big singer.
This is our land.
Oh, Mayor!
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of that white savior narrative, which has been around for a long time. I would say that Avatar puts a bit of a new spin on it because of how much I think Cameron identifies with both worlds because of these aforementioned sort of extreme hard, soft qualities that he has. But also because, you know, in this case, what Jake Sully's character does is it's not so much his superiority that allows him to kind of thrive in this narrative. It's the fact that he is one of the invaders and he knows how their minds work and he knows what you need to do to defeat them.
Look, at first, it was just orders. And then everything changed. Okay, I fell in love. I fell in love with the forest. With the Kaya people, with you.
And at the end, he completely sheds his human self. I mean,
he becomes one of the Na'vi. Yeah.
He becomes one of the Na'vi. I mean, the thing I would say about Avatar is I don't know that anybody walked out of Avatar in, 2009 or whenever saying, boy, that Jake Sully sure showed those Na'vi how to do it, you know? Like, I think they walked out of it thinking, man, humans suck. The Na'vi are awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk more about the defense of Avatar that you have written, because I've never read anything like it. Your thoughts on the franchise are pretty bullish on all things Avatar, the original, the new one, all of it. In September of this year, you wrote a piece called, quote, "Sorry, but Avatar still rules." You said that James Cameron was, quote, cinema's master of the vibe shift. And then you said of the first movie that it left movie graveyards filled with wannabe blockbusters that couldn't live up to the promise of Avatar. Why are you that bullish on this movie and this franchise?
Well, part of it was because I was trying to respond to this idea that it left no pop cultural footprint. And one of the things that happened in the wake of Avatar, there were a number of films that were imitating Avatar, whether it was trying to replicate the 3D or trying to kind of replicate the story. And a lot of those films flopped. They were unable to do that. In fact, 3D, you know, for like, if you remember, for like 2 or 3 years after Avatar,
oh,
every
I hated
movie
it. I
was
hated
released
it.
In 3D.
I hated it. Oh, my
and
God.
And it was horrible. And what I was trying to say there was, you know, you can also gauge the importance of something by the sheer amount of imitators that failed to accomplish what it did. So that's kind of what I was noting there.
It's funny when I think of like the After Effects of Avatar, all I think of is how Zoe Saldana then went on to play a green alien, which I found funny. But what were all of the movies that came in Avatar's wake trying to be new 3D Avatar? Take us back.
Well, I was thinking of the one thing I was thinking of was Sam Worthington in Clash of the Titans, if you remember.
My father. was killed by a god. My mother, sister, everyone I loved was killed by a god. I mend nets, not wield a sword.
You know, at the time, it seemed like, oh, Sam Worthington's going to be a huge star. And of course, it didn't happen. There was, I remember this, if you remember this animated film called Epic.
Somebody told me once that if you stand still in the forest long enough, you'll see signs of a hidden struggle raging between forces of life and decay.
There'd be so many films where I was reviewing it, and I remember thinking to myself, this is trying to be Avatar, and it's kind of not working, like, at all. So much so that, you know, something similar happened in the wake of Titanic, for example. I remember a movie I actually really like, Perfect Storm. I remember a lot of people responded to the Mark Wahlberg romance aspect of it.
There's nothing like sleep, won't you? Just sleeping, lying next to you. All warm and sweet.
It just felt like such an imitation. So it's like there. It's not just the films that are imitating it, but the films that feel like they're imitating it, even if they're not, because, you know, you've kind of been, or audiences have been Avatar-pilled, if you will.
Okay, so this is the thing that I just can't seem to wrap my head around. Hmm. If James Cameron makes Titanic, it's one of the biggest films of all time, and then people are trying to make copycat Titanics, and then James Cameron makes Avatar, and that's the biggest film of all time, and then everyone's trying to copy Avatar, why do I still feel like the majority of the conversation around James Cameron and Avatar is a joke? People love making fun of him and his maximalist impulses. People love making fun of those blue people and that font. I still don't understand. If this stuff is so good, so groundbreaking, why is it still always the butt of a joke?
But if it's so meaningless and has had no impact, how are we still able to make jokes about it? I mean, obviously right now there's a new Avatar coming out, but I mean, several years, you know, I mean, I said this, I think, I can't remember if I said this in my piece. I think I said it in a tweet and people got mad at me, but the papyrus joke on SNL, one of the funniest bits I've ever seen in my life.
I forgot about it for years, but then I remembered that Avatar, the giant international blockbuster, used the papyrus font as its logo.
Avatar, the movie from like 9 years ago?
Yeah, he just highlighted Avatar, he clicked the drop-down menu, and then he just randomly selected papyrus, like a thoughtless child just wandering by a garden, just yanking leaves along the way.
How many movies can you make that bit about? I mean, when that bit was on SNL, it had been how many years since Avatar had come out? How many films that old can you make that
name
skit
the
about?
Font? Well, no, it's true. I cannot name a font of any other movie. I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Okay. You're saying that James Cameron's haters are his motivators, that we hate him because we ain't him, and that all talk is good talk. All press is good press. All right. Yeah.
I think also James Cameron leans into this slightly ridiculous quality. I mean, he's kind of self-important, but I think he's very aware of how he comes off. I think his whole thing is, again, the macho bluster side of him, which is, and he did this with Avatar too. Remember, in the run-up to Avatar, before it came out, was a joke. I mean, I remember I was making fun of this, you know, his Comic-Con appearances, and then you know, they released some early footage, which actually looked kind of terrible.
We've done everything from figure out the ecology, the composition of the atmosphere, the geography, all the different species of animals and plants, to the Na'vi people, their culture, their history, their language. Dr. Paul Frommer, who is the head of linguistics at USC, or was at the time, spent 2 years working on the language and created a little Berlitz course for all the actors. And
I mentioned this in my piece at the time, which, you know, the New Yorker profile, which just seemed like he had completely lost his mind.
Oh my God, read that line from the New Yorker profile, because you wrote it in your piece, and I was like, oh, that's wild. Can you pull that up?
I'll bleep out the expletive. That effing rocks.
Oh, just say it, Bilger. Just say it. That fucking rocks. You can do it.
That fucking rocks. Look at the gill like membrane on the side of the mouth. It's transmission of light. All the secondary color saturation on the tongue and that maxilla bone. I love what you did with the translucent on the teeth and the way the quadrate bone racks the teeth forward. This is a creature that I believe we see all of 45 seconds in the movie.
Can I give you my theory of this new film and then a little bit more of my theory of James Cameron?
Sure.
First big takeaway. This is a visual spectacle. It's beautiful. It is a visual achievement. What he's doing with these computers, it's crazy. There were moments where I just paused to marvel at the way the fake water splashed. Like, is that good? But besides that, and after that, the negatives kind of start to rack up. This movie is 3 hours and 10 minutes long. No. Don't do that. The plot is not that involved to where it needs 3 hours and 10 minutes to lay it out. I don't need an hour in Whale World to get that the water is beautiful, you know? I also think that, like, and this is my larger beef, I think, with Avatar. It's really hard to take the earnest moments earnestly because so much of the stuff in the movie itself leans comical. The font is funny. The dreadlocks on the Na'vi people, especially when you think of which characters get to have them and which do not, it's funny. The proportions of the blue people, it's a little funny. This film is already earnest enough to be mocked, but it's also weird and strange looking enough to be hilarious in a way that I don't think James Cameron wants. That said, I don't think he cares, and that's the point. But whenever I wanted to really, really fully root for this movie, I got tired because it was too long, or I laughed at things I shouldn't have been laughing at.
I don't know if he doesn't want you to laugh at that stuff. I watched the film again last night as well. And you know, there
you got a lot of time on your hands.
I got a lot of time on my hands. Well, you know, it's my job to see these. And the fact that luckily I do like it, so it's not torture to sit through it again. But there was a lot of stuff in there I laughed at, and I remember thinking, I think this is supposed to be funny. Like, you know, the whole thing where he and Neytiri go on a date night, and he literally calls it a date night, which I was, you know, I just kind of casually wrote it down in my notes the first time. And then the second time I was like, wait, did he say date night?
Yeah. For me, it was all of the Free Willy imagery. Like at one point, there's a Free Willy whale jump.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like waiting for Michael Jackson to start singing. And then there's like sonar communication with the whale who was sharing its trauma. It was just like, do you want me to cry at this or laugh at this, James Cameron? I don't know.
Well, I think it's like almost a dare for him, because I think it's like, you're going to laugh when this whale first starts talking. But by the end of the whole whale thing, you're going to cry. And I will say that was my experiences. Now, I grew up around the sea. I'm obsessed with the sea. I wanted to be a marine biologist when I was a kid. So this stuff hits me in my sweet spot, you know?
Okay.
The middle hour of this movie, which is definitely the slowest part, which is basically just them hanging out with whales. My favorite part of the movie. I mean, it could have been 7 hours. Say, I would still be there watching it.
Great whales, beautiful whales. They're gorge. Yeah. But it's a whole hour up in there.
It is. It's a lot of whale. It is a lot of whale. And you know, if you don't like whales, it's going to be rough. but it's also, I mean, I thought, you know, you mentioned the effects. The effects are, I mean, they're so spectacular that you forget their effects. I mean, that was my experience.
At one point last night, can I tell you, full to God honest, there's like one of the scenes where there's like these butterflies flying around in the 3D. One of them was flying around, and then I tried to swat at it. I thought it was a bug outside of my face. Bilga, not even lying. I swatted at the 3D butterfly because I thought it was in front of me.
That's the magic of Avatar. I mean,
yeah,
it really is. I still have not wrapped my head around the fact that this stuff doesn't exist. None of this stuff exists. Like, they created all this stuff in a computer. That's insane.
Last question for you. And actually, you pick the question that you want to answer based on how you think this film will do.
Okay.
If this movie succeeds, what is the lesson the rest of Hollywood should take from James Cameron? Or if this movie fails, What is the lesson James Cameron should take from Hollywood?
If it succeeds, I think the lesson one can take is, you know, don't be afraid to take the time and the effort you need to do something right. I mean, this film has been delayed for so long. And obviously, it's a very elaborate, you know, technologically complicated project. But one of the things I've discovered over the years in sort of, especially when I do some of my oral histories of like Disney movies and things like that, you know, the release dates can be so ironclad because, you know, they've got the Happy Meals and all, they've got all these corporate partners that are getting their products ready. So it takes a lot to be able to move a release date. But, you know, because Cameron has kept such tight control over the whole thing, they're ready when he's ready. And I think that that's an important lesson that Hollywood can learn. As far as what James Cameron can learn if the film flops, well, I think the what he can learn is that, you know, people aren't always going to be there for him, you know, for his visions. But he learned that, you know, he learned that with The Abyss, which at the time was like the most ambitious film he'd ever made and was kind of a flop. So, you know, I mean, James Cameron could probably stand to be a little more humble, although I don't want him to be too humble. Yeah.
I will say, I think, like, for me, if not a lesson, what I'm taking from my Avatar experience is that, like, if you have the ability and the wherewithal and the budget to make the thing that you want to make exactly the way you want to make it, then do that. Life is too short. You want to make some tall blue aliens frolicking with the whales? If someone's going to pay for that, do it. I don't know. It's like James Cameron and those blue Smurf people are just telling me to do exactly what the hell I want to do. I want to Avatar my life, if that makes
sense.
Seize
the day.
Seize the day. Carpe freaking diem. Thank you, James. Thank you, Bilga, for doing the work of watching this film more than once and for talking with me and our listeners about it. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks again to Bilga Abiri. Go check out all of his stuff over at Vulture, but be sure to read his Avatar essay from this September. It is called Sorry, But Avatar Still Rules. Can't say I agree, but it's a good read. It's a good read. Thank you, Bilga.
Culturegeist. Culturegeist. You're listening to Culturegeist. Culturegeist. I don't know, y'all.
And now for a segment we're calling Culturegeist. About all the things we can't stop thinking about. The culture that's haunting you, haunting me, haunting all of us, for better or worse.
My name is Gabby Grossman. I'm a producer on this here podcast, Intuit. And this time of year, you know, the seasons are changing. The tree in Rockefeller Center is being lit. And it has me thinking about the amazing performance that took place 15 Christmases ago when Ashley Tisdale performed at the Rockefeller Center Christmas lighting, and she performed Last Christmas. It is just an iconic performance, specifically the way she says the words shoulder to cry on.
Me, I guess I was a shoulder to cry on.
Her choreography, she's having her full pop girl moment, and Ashley, never stop Christmasing. We love you for it. Thank you.
La 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 la. Happy holidays!
Hey Sam, this is Monica in Portland, Oregon. My culturegeist is a clip that I saw from Jimmy Fallon's show a couple weeks ago that had Chance the Rapper playing a game in which he had to sing.
So you have to sing Hot in Here by Nelly, but in a country rock version. Adam, can you guys...
And it is perfection from his voice and accent to the little sounds he makes throughout to his swagger.
Good gracious, ass bodacious. Bird tastes trying to show space. I'm looking for the right time to shoot my speed.
It's just such an incredible moment that I would buy a whole album of, and then just I could watch over and over and over again, and it just makes me feel really good about humans. So check it out. Thanks for your show.
Hi, my name is Catherine, and my Culturegeist is 2017 weird confluence of cultural references. So at the 2017 Oscars, Ben Dreyfuss, the son of Richard Dreyfuss, but also at the time the editorial director of the investigative news magazine Mother Jones, was live blogging the Oscars on Mother Jones. Throughout the live blogging, he keeps referencing the great TV show Mozart in the Jungle, which is a TV show and can't be nominated for the Oscars, nor can he remember the name of the lead actor, Gael García Bernal. At some point, while Bernal is presenting an award...
Their stories are as entertaining and powerful as any found in films that feature flesh and blood actors.
Dreyfuss writes, Sir, I love you. I want to be your best friend. I should probably learn your name. And for whatever reason... I have remembered that now for almost 6 years, and anytime I see a fashionable person on the street, a good-looking dog, or have a friend crush, I think to myself, sir, I love you. I want to be your best friend. I should probably learn your name. And that's all.
Thanks again to Catherine, Monica, and Gabi. Listeners, do you have a Culturegeist? A thing in the culture that's been haunting you for days or weeks or even years? The more specific you are, the better. Send us a short voice memo at intuit@vulture.com. Also, if you like this show and want to support it, we could use your help. Subscribe to Intuit on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. And most importantly, share it with your friends. Tell your friends you like this show and bug them until they listen to it too. Truly, every little bit helps. All right, Intuit is hosted by me, Sam Sanders. The show is produced by Janae West, Travis Larchuk, Gabi Grossman, and Jelani Carter. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman. Our engineer is Daniel Turek. Our music is composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. And Hannah Rosen is the editorial director of audio at New York Magazine. All right, listeners, we are back next Thursday with a new episode. Till then, be good to yourselves. Talk soon.
Why do you run? Why does anyone?
I always thought that runners loved running, and that's not the case. Most runners hate running, but they choose to do it.
In the new docuseries, Running Sucks, brought to you by Team Milk, Abby Ayers learns why women runners everywhere are driven to go the distance.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
Team Milk is about fueling women's performance and helping them along their marathon journeys. You can sign up now for the inaugural Every Woman's Marathon taking place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16th, 2024. Learn more and register at everywomansmarathon.com.